Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along.
As I said to Seth about 2 minutes ago, it's good that we can come so quickly to a decision in making a call at 9:30 when we had the call between Seth and I at 9:24. So 6 minutes, no problem. Seth's on the road in the car on his way to work. Sean is taking a little break from his work. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to ladies and gentlemen that are generally listening at our normal time, which is 7 o'clock p.m., but I will be at Madison Square Garden tooting my horn. No, literally, tooting my horn, my trombone. Syracuse plays Connecticut tonight, and I have the privilege of playing in the pep band, which is kind of cool, being 41 years old and still playing in the pep band. So welcome to the show, everybody.
It brings up the obvious question, and I sound so sophomoric asking it. How rusty is your trombone?
See, and I thought you were gonna go a different way with this, and I thought you were gonna ask me, what more can a band geek want than to play in the either way is fine. Look, first of all, welcome to the show, everybody. Seth Kamen's there in the car, Sean Palmer here in Manhattan, and it's interesting because I don't care, and this is a little sidebar from the sports for a second. I really don't care what anybody says about or makes fun about being in the band, whether it be marching band or pep band or whatever. Aside from Seth and my brothers, my literal brothers, my best friends were made in marching band. They've lasted 20 years, and they would be there whenever and however I need them. So you make all the jokes you want, you make all the criticisms you want, but it's been a great ride, and obviously it still continues, which is kind of strange when you think about it 20-some-odd years later. So here we are, Syracuse and Connecticut tonight. And, you know, this week has been, I don't know how you say it delicately. I remember. It's what our guest called it last week. It was a dumpster fire. This entire week in sports has been a complete and total dumpster fire. So would you like to start, Seth? I'm going to give you door number one, door number two, door number three, or door number four. And I got one behind each door. Which door would you like to start with today?
I will start with my favorite number, which is four. So please tell
which is my favorite number, excellent. Door number four, and that's actually my favorite number too, which is... I did not know that about you, but okay.
There you go.
Door number four. Welcome to unemployment, University of Tennessee Athletic Director, John
Curry.
Welcome to unemployment. So let's understand what this guy went through in the last 4 months. He was hired 4 months ago. Within the last 4 months, he decided to fire his head coach, which was fine. Butch Jones probably deserved to be fired.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, maybe a couple of weeks too late, as it turned out, but deservingly so. He got turned down. Well, sorry. He came to a memorandum of understanding with a coach, Greg Schiano, who was then basically, what's the word I want to say? Not raked at the
demolished.
Stage, lynched.
Demolished in the press. Lynched.
Yeah, demolished in the press, lynched in the press, not lynched literally, lynched in the press. And then he gets turned down by, last I count, 7 guys? I think it's been that much, right? Gruden, the guy from North Carolina State.
Dave Doran. Jeff Brown. Willie Taggart.
Scott Frost.
There's been a... Scott Frost. I don't even know if Scott Frost interviewed. It has been, and the funny part was the one of the reasons he left Kansas State was Bill Snyder, who's been there forever. who's going to retire soon, and Snyder wants his son, Sean Snyder, to take over the program. And John Curry wasn't particularly comfortable with that, which is why, plus, you know, you're going to Tennessee SEC, big-time sports school. I don't think he thought he'd be walking into this. And so
well, he's not walking
have
into
the
anything right now, Seth. He's walking
well, now he's, yeah, now he's leaving with probably relatively nice buyout. Plus, he was being kind of, you know, stabbed in the back by the ex-coach, Bill Fulmer, who is now taking over as the athletic director. It is – that school has had a credibility problem the last couple of years. They had it, remember, when they fired Lane Kiffin, when Lane here to go to USC. So their last four coaches have lasted, I think, an average of about 2 years each. Derek Dooley, I forget the one before him. Kiffin, Lane Jones, Butch Jones. They were the first, I believe, BCS champion with T. Martin, and they have become the laughingstock of the NCAA.
Yep. Well, there's no really easier way to say it. Now there are reports that Les Miles would come. With Phil Fulmer, I don't think that's a bad hire, but I think that's a saving hire. I mean, if you can get somebody with Les Miles' experience and acumen and resume, I think that's a no-brainer, especially based on where you are today.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if he fits the Tennessee profile, but at the end of the day, he's an SEC coach. He's won a national championship. He's well-respected. He's also 65 years old. So it's probably a 4 to 5, you know, he's not in the 7. He can go another 5 to 7 years and help transition out of this cluster beat, for lack of a better term.
Well, are we using dumpster fire? We're using dumpster fire so we don't have to go there with the cluster beep. But here's the thing. For Miles, I think it's a save for him too, right? Because Les Miles hasn't been in the coaching carousel discussions for some time. So would it be possible
I believe he only left was last year. He was fired. So it's not like he's not pulling a Herm Edwards where he's coming back from 9 years out to come on.
No, that's actually door number 3. So if you want to go there, we're happy to go there. There are a multitude of doors that are on my radar today. But let's go to door number 3 and let's go to you play to win the game, which I cannot wait for somebody to say that in a press conference again. Because, and you know, Herm Edwards doesn't even know that a Sun Devil is Arizona State's mascot, which seems kind of strange when you're going to take over a program. That seemed to be the off. I'm sorry? No, he did not.
He did not know. Wow.
So that seems to be a little bit of, wow, let's pull this one out of left field just so we can have a name. Now, you don't hear Arizona State very often in the circles of the Pac-10. You hear more Arizona and Rich Rodriguez. Is that a good hire? I mean, I'm going to ask you because I can't remember, aside from USC, UCLA, or Oregon, the last Pac-10 game I have watched, ever.
Well, I watch a lot. I do watch a lot more Pac-10 than you do because I have a wife who goes to bed at 10:30, so it works perfectly. I have no idea why. I think his personality really does fit the college game. He's a rah-rah guy. You can bring the X's and O's. Like, his best friend, now, I believe one of his closest friends is the Arizona State athletic director, which is, I think, how this came to pass. But he's never recruited before. He's never coached college before. He's never had time for it. It's such an extraordinarily different mentality. I mean, heck, he hasn't coached the pros in 9 years, 8 years. unless I'm mistaken. It's a gamble, but I think the thought process is, I guess they weren't going to get Kevin Sumlin. That's my assumption. But I thought he was the favorite to get this job. There's nobody else you really want. You really kind of want to make a name. He's a name. He's a name that people that recruits will know. He knows the pro game. I don't know if it's a fit. I have no idea. It's an interesting choice. And a lot of times I say interesting choice and with kind of a roll of my eyes, you know, thought process behind it. I don't do that with this because I really don't know. It's just he's so far outside of the circle of where I would have seen a coach coming from. It's really hard for me to make a determination whether it's the right fit or not.
Okay. Well, let's continue down the coaching carousel while we're here. So Jimbo Fisher moves from probably one of the best two programs in the ACC, maybe two to three programs in the ACC. I'm talking programs, not necessarily results right now. And moves to top five in the SEC. Is that a step up other than the money? And
no.
The money was $1.5 million. So, I mean, I can't believe this
was
a step up for him.
It's not. But what happens is this. He had gotten stale, for lack of a better term. And Jimbo Fisher is kind of known in the college ranks as someone who's never particularly happy. He wants this, he wants that, he wants better facilities, he wants this, yada, yada, yada. You can do that when you're going 10-2 and 11-1. You can't do that when you're 6-6. Now, I don't think he would have been fired this year by any stretch. But I think what had happened was he had just simply gotten stale. And that happens with people who coach at a certain place for 9 years, 10 years, 11 years. And I think he was cognizant of that. He received 10 years, $75 million. So even if he's not cognizant of that money, he's going to be the richest bachelor in College Station. So, I mean, he's going to a solid program, not a great one, but they do have a phenomenal fan base. And it's a team that can win. And, you're not going to Vandy, Boeing, University of Patients for Ann Arbor are not going to be quite as high. But, you know, the expectation with A&M is you're going to be a 9-3 team. You know, Florida State, it's going to be an 11-1 team. Or it's a disappointment. Besides, it's hard to turn down an extra $25 million.
No, and I get that. Okay, so let's move on to – and this is a carousel because out, obviously, is Jimbo Fisher, and in is probably Willie Taggart from Oregon. And, by the way, I thought – just to go back a second, I thought one of the more interesting interviews for Tennessee would have been Mike Leach, who reportedly had interviewed. Like I said, they've been turned down at least 5 or 6 times. I would have loved to have seen Mike Leach at Tennessee because I think that would have been volcanoes erupting all over the place.
Curry, they had agreed to hire Mike Leach. And then the chancellor or Phil Fulmer or someone in Tennessee's administration turned it down.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's similar to what happened with Maryland and Mike Leach many years ago. And instead, we got Randy Edsel. Awesome. New athletic director.
So here's my thinking, though, or here's my question. Maybe you can answer this. Maybe you can. I don't know. So Tennessee would have easily taken Mike Gundy, right, from Oklahoma State. And I know, ladies and gentlemen, we are backtracking. We're going a little bit backwards, and we're talking about stuff that we've already passed. But it's necessary you go through. They would have taken Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy is an extremely strong personality. Extremely strong.
Yeah.
He's been on the wrong side of a press conference or two when he was 40.
He's a man.
And he's obviously a man, right? And he's a man. So what is it about Mike Leach that's so much different than Mike Gundy that rubs people the wrong way? Because it's obvious now, if you're telling me, if you're telling me that he had an agreement in Maryland and they backed out, and they had an agreement in Tennessee and he backed out, he wins. Why is it that other coaches can win and keep moving on and on and on, even if they are despised or do something wrong? And Mike Leach seems to always get, hit with it, whatever it is. Yeah, the short end of the stick.
My guess is with Leach, Leach is smarter than all these people. Unequivocally smarter. He's an attorney by trade. I don't know if he knew that. And my guess is he's not shy about this. And it takes either a team that is desperate for the attention, or desperate to be relevant, I should say, or an extraordinarily secure athletic director or admin or president or whoever it is to deal with this. Washington State was desperate for the attention. Texas Tech was desperate for the attention. Tennessee doesn't need the attention. Maryland didn't need the attention, but they had Maryland had a new chancellor coming in and an AD. Tennessee's AD was kind of a, had already lost the credibility, wrongly so in my opinion, of backing. So I don't know. I think at some point he may get one big time job, because I don't consider Washington State a big time job, although he's made them a top 25 team. It would have been great to see him in the SEC. I agree. It would have been a lot of fun.
And I think that's my point, right? So he doesn't get the top job. Texas Tech is not a top job. Who's going to hire this guy? I mean, where would that be?
I don't know.
What type of chancellor would be able to take that risk?
How about, speaking of a job that just opened,
Oregon?
There's a pretty good job. It is in Pac-10. In Eugene. I don't know if Leach is a nice guy or not, but it's in conference. It would be a huge payday, and it's a school that we've seen can compete for a national championship. I didn't know Tiger signed the deal, so I knew they were talking about it last night.
He didn't sign the deal yet. I mean, I think that's pretty much fait accompli, don't you?
Well, supposedly FSU lowballed him. And Phil Knight had asked Taggart for a final meeting, to match or exceed any price. I like it was Phil Knight that asked for the meeting, not the athletic director, but... So, I don't know if it's fate or complete, because I know Taggart was pretty pissed with the offer.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but I mean, all based right. on your point, I'll assume he's taking the job. And, I mean, I have to assume that Taggart had an out clause for any of the three big Florida schools. Because he's been there for a year. You don't go to a school like Oregon and jump after a year. You just don't. Unless it's one of these schools. And I'm not really sure if Florida State's a better job than Oregon, to be perfectly honest, but he's a Florida guy.
Yeah, he's definitely a Florida guy. Okay, so the last of the coaching carousel is Central Florida's coach Scott Frost going home to Nebraska. And there'll be more firings, hirings at smaller schools. But this is pretty much the end of the big school concept here. The right move for Frost? Because I'm not sure it was.
here's the problem. Probably not. But it's an impossible job to turn down. It's because he can probably build a 10-2, 11 in one team in Florida, in UCF, and be there for perpetuity, live a very happy, easy life there. Or you go into the quagmire.
Okay, Seth, we lost you, buddy. We completely just lost you. We lost like half of that. So you could build up a 10-2 UCF, or you could go into the Big Ten and finish your sentence.
Okay. And you're talking about a school that still thinks this is the mid-90s. And they think that, you know, Nebraska is not the Nebraska of 1995. It's a very, whatever, it's a mediocre program at this point. And, you know, even in its best day going forward, it's going to be extremely difficult if the Big Red Faithful think we're going to revert back to the mid-90s where Nebraska won 3 out of 4 titles. So I'm curious to see. Now, Frost had a very up-and-down relationship with the Nebraska fan base in the night while he was the quarterback and led them to a split national title in 97, I believe. You know, he should have a lot of leeway. Because that team, while not the dumpster fire that Tennessee is, it's certainly not improved in the 3 years under Mike Riley.
No, Mike Riley was basically a stopgap, and Frost was hired this year. He was actually considered a couple of years ago, but dismissed out of hand. And then he took the job this time. I'm not sure he had anything to gain by staying at Central Florida. That would be the only reason. Now, is this the job to take if you're going to leave? I could make the claim, and I think you could too, that Florida was a better job. You can make the case that Texas A&M was a better job. Florida State is certainly a better job. All three of these are better jobs than Nebraska. But there is that home sentimentality, and I did not know the history behind Scott Frost to begin with. He originally committed to Stanford. He went there for 2 years and then transferred back to win a national championship. So, obviously, there is some sentimentality for Scott Frost in dealing with Nebraska. So I can understand, but here's the thing. Is there any way that Scott Frost doesn't lose in this situation? I think the only way that Scott Frost does not lose in this situation is winning 10 games a year for the next 4 years.
The problem is a lot of these schools, Nebraska and Tennessee, are phenomenal and great examples. These are schools that went with great, with historical legacies, and even in the mid, you know, the mid-90s, the 1995 Nebraska football team, I believe the greatest college football team I've ever seen.
You know, that was Tommy Frazier, correct?
That was Tommy Frazier beating Florida by 40 in the Orange Bowl. Tennessee had Peyton Manning, you know, then won a national title with T. Martin. Under Phil Fulmer. They were great under Johnny Majors. But the last 8 to 10 years, both of these schools have been relatively black. You know, they've been the 8 to 9 win team that goes to the Outback Bowl or goes to the Holiday Bowl or goes to the Citrus Bowl. They haven't been really, you know, I mean, Maryland even beat Tennessee by 25 or so about, you know, many years ago in the Gator Bowl. So but the fans still see it as this upper echelon school. And nothing is going to convince them to the contrary. I mean, to be honest, that Greg Schiano was a really good hire for Tennessee. I thought it made a lot of sense. I mean, you know, they're never going to be satisfied because you look at Tennessee, they're not a Florida, they're not an Alabama, they're not a Georgia, they're not an Auburn right now. They're a very mid-tier team at this point. And have been for several years. You know, Nebraska is probably the second best program in the Big Ten West behind Wisconsin, but is not up to par with Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan or Michigan State. It hasn't been for years. They're mid-tier schools. They're mid-tier, you know, they're high-end in regards, they're diva personalities with mid-tier results.
Yep. Okay, so before we get off the college football, what's that?
I actually like that quote. I think that was pretty good.
There you go. Well, you know what? It you can have the Sean Palmer pat on the back today. There you go. Give yourself a virtual pat on the back. Well done. Okay, before we get off the college football scene, and we've talked a good 25 minutes about it, which is good because this is college football time. There's one thing that we haven't talked about, and that is the fact that I did not get what I wanted at all.
Nope.
Not at all. In fact, I got the opposite of what I wanted. Everything about it. I got no chaos.
You got a sexy Final Four.
I got an unsexy Final Four. What are you kidding? I got nothing that I wanted. Absolutely nothing that I wanted.
No. You didn't get it. College football got a sexy Final Four. You got nothing about what you wanted.
Well, did they get a sexy Final Four? Is Alabama considered sexy right now?
Yeah. It's Alabama.
Okay. That's fair. I guess if you get like the Yankees and Dodgers, it doesn't matter who they are, who's on the teams, they're still the Yankees and Dodgers. So
yeah,
I guess you're right. So okay, so a sexy Final Four for them, no chaos for me. Absolutely no chaos for me. And once again, you can have an argument for Ohio State versus Alabama. I get it. I get the fact that there could be an argument. But I think they got it right. I mean, I think I said last week that I thought Alabama was the better team, even though they faced worse competition. I thought that they were the better team. Do you disagree?
No. I mean, at the end of the day, this is where I came in on this. You lost by 35 to Iowa. Stop your complaining. You have no – I wouldn't have had a huge argument if they made it. But you have no argument. You have no real argument that you deserved it. Every team is allowed every team has a loss. You know, Clemson did not have a good loss, but they lost by 4 on the road when their quarterback got hurt. Bad team.
Let's understand. Hold on. The best sign that was found that the ACC championship game was somebody in the background that said Syracuse is a quality loss. That was the best sign I saw in the entire game day. No, it was not me. It was at game day. And it was the best sign I saw all day. Because we're a quality loss, baby. 4-8. We're a quality loss. But you're not going to knock out Clemson for having... I mean, you have two losses. At the end of the day, you have two losses.
You have two losses. And neither loss was close. It wasn't a 20, it wasn't Iowa State beating Oklahoma by 7. Now again, Iowa State's a 7-5 team. Good story. Beat a couple good teams this year. Oklahoma beats Ohio State by 15 at Ohio State. Okay, you know what? If they were 11-1 and that was their loss, probably they make it. You cannot excuse a 35-point loss. You just can't. Not when you're the fourth team.
Right.
I
think that's what it came down to. I think it came down to if you lost by 35 – if you're – let's put it this way. If you're Clemson and you lose by 35 to Florida State and that's your one loss, you can get by if that's your one loss. But if you're Clemson and you have a 4-point loss to Syracuse and a 35-point loss to Florida State, you don't get in. It's because you have a second loss, and everybody else has one. That does not trump it. And again, I didn't get what I wanted. I didn't get anything, and I knew it from the very beginning when I started watching the games. I was like, all right, Oklahoma's killing them. All right, Georgia's killing them. All right, Ohio State's going to beat Wisconsin. This sucks. I think that's what I said at the end of the day. I went to bed on Saturday night going, this sucks. I don't get chaos. It's horrible. But you know what? At the end of the day, it is a sexy championship. We'll talk more about it next week as far as making our selections in the championship games, because we certainly don't need to do that this week. We have another dumpster fire to talk about, but it has nothing to do with college football. It has everything to do with East Rutherford, and the uniform is not green. I'm so happy to hear this for the first time. Us Jets fans, and we are the younger brother. First of all, I root for every younger brother, it seems like. We are the younger brother to the older, more sophisticated, more politically correct Big Blue that is very conservative in nature, never makes a big mistake except for, oh, I'm sorry, Ray Hanley in 1993. But other than that, everything's been very politically correct, being very quiet. And then we have this week. Yay!
Are you done?
I am now. That for all Jets fans out there, you can now thank me. Go on. So how is this dumpster fire working out for you?
Well, I guess I look at it this way. We're 2-10. Our defense is still pretty good. We're going to get a top-5 pick. We're going to have a new GM who can actually hopefully draft better than Reese has in the last 10 years. And we'll get a new coach, which we needed, who will make a decision whether they want to start keep Manning or start or see what Davis Webb has to do. The Jets, on the other hand, are going to be perpetually into the 6-10 mediocrity, where you'll draft the number 4 quarterback, and 5 years from now, when the Giants go back and win a championship or go to the Super Bowl, the Jets are still 6-10, 7-9, and we, for the umpteenth straight year, we look to see which quarterback they take. Maybe we'll go from there.
Hey,
be okay.
Hey, hey, let me relish in my 1 week, because this is the week I have to relish in. I understand that we just screwed up our draft position. I said this at the beginning of the year, did I not? The Jets would go just enough to screw up the draft position. And now they're number 9. And the only way that the Jets will get a quarterback in this draft is if they pick Baker Mayfield, which I cannot believe that Baker Mayfield would make it in New York. In fact, that may be almost as entertaining as Mike Leach in Tennessee. And or Josh Allen out of Wyoming, but that's only if all three, Darnold, Rosen, and Allen, all come out. Then there's a possibility that the Jets could get Allen. But I'll tell you right now, Seth, you probably did not watch the Jet game this week. It's the first actual Jet game I watched all year, start to finish.
And it was a good game.
It was a good game. Here's the thing that was surprising to me. There were a number of throws that Josh McCown – did you watch the game? I'm not sure if you did.
Most of it, yeah.
Okay. There were a couple of throws that McCown made that basically I said, oh, my God, that's a great throw. I mean, he made throws that had me second-guessing whether a quarterback – I won't say a quarterback for the future is necessary because we do need one. McCown is 35 years old anyway. But whether we need a quarterback for next year, do you draft one in the first round? And I understand that sometimes you need to draft one in the first round, but I'm not sure that I like the way McCown looked, and I'm not sure whether that's because the Chiefs were bad, which is possible, or it's because the Chiefs had given up, which is also possible, or the fact that he just looked good on one game. And I've only seen, as I said before, one game this year. But he looked good. And the wide receivers looked good. Kirsten Anderson looked very good.
Todd Bowles isn't gonna be fired, is he?
Nope. He just saved his his neck. He shouldn't be. Absolutely not. The team has not given up on him. No. Absolutely not.
This team could be very well be 8-5, as ridiculous as that sounds. They have been in every game except for two this year.
Yep. Buffalo, where they lost by 13, and the Raiders in game two. Yep. I completely agree with you. I think we had both said that Todd Bowles would lose his job this year. I'm definitely one that said it. You said he would be the first one to lose his job this year. I think he has definitely earned another year. Absolutely. And he coaches well, and he's coaching up his talent, which I think is the sign of a good coach. So I definitely think that he's there. Unfortunately for you and I, we took the Giants at their word that Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese would be there for Jerry Reese. I almost said Floyd Reese. Floyd Reese is the ex-GM of the Houston Oilers and Tennessee Titans. We took Mr. Mara at his word, and we thought that this would be the end of Eli Manning's career in Giantville, certainly starting lineup, and we dumped him on the waiver wire. And this week, they play Dallas, who Eli has always had a good record against and has always played well against. So to answer your question, Seth, and to answer, I'm sure, the millions and millions of listeners that are listening to this, Seth and I will be making a play at re-picking up Eli Manning. And we'll probably start him this week, too, because our quarterbacks are a dumpster fire. Perpetually a dumpster fire this year.
Well, okay, let's be fair. And we also still have the most points in the league by about 150.
That's due to last night's game, my friend, where this was me leading into last night's game of the Steelers and the Bengals, where the Steelers put up a huge amount of points, as did the Bengals. But fantasy-wise, Brown and Bell, once again, have led the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show team to victory. But that was look, I got up early this morning. I actually DVR'd the game last night because I needed to get some rest, and I wanted to see if there was any possibility of like shenanigans going on, because these two teams are always entertaining because they hate each other. I mean, they absolutely hate each other more than I believe I have ever seen two NFL teams go at it in an NFL game. Can you remember another two NFL teams that have despised each other this much?
It's a different kind of hatred. It's not a Pittsburgh Ravens or a Giants Cowboys or a Redskins Cowboys where there's hatred, but it's kind of a respected hatred. It's a rivalry hatred. These two seem to despise each other. I really can't. You know, maybe Kansas City, Denver, or maybe one of the AFC West rivalries. But for two teams who I never really considered rivals, there is an immense amount of hatred between these two organizations.
Yeah, they just with all those other rivalries that we talk about, and you could put the Jets and Dolphins and the Jets in New England, or any rivalry, the Raiders and the Broncos and the Raiders, maybe the Raiders back in the 70s had something like this, but it's the point that these guys seem like they want to injure each other. And for that to take hold is every NFL fan's nightmare, because it's exactly what the proponents of banning the NFL or banning football or changing the way the game is played, this is what they will point to, is the injuries that took place last night. You know, I'm a fanboy of Ryan Shazier, and he got carted off. Vontaze Burfict got carted off. Joe Mixon got carted off. Who was the other
one? The irony that Vontaze Burfict, who's probably considered just about the dirtiest player in football, got knocked out by a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Have you seen the hit?
Yeah, Juju. Juju. I can't remember
Juju.
His last name, but Juju. Yeah, Juju.
Yeah.
I get it, but...
I actually didn't think it was that dirty of a hit. I thought the taunting was terrible.
Well, the taunting was ridiculously bad.
It wasn't a hit from the back. I don't know how dirty it was.
No, but, okay, I'm not saying it was dirty. I'm not saying any of these hits were dirty, okay? But you don't have to be dirty to be gunning for somebody either, right?
Sure.
So, you could have a completely legal hit, and I'm trying to remember the quarterback that got laid up like 10 years ago on an interception. I can't remember the quarterback. There was a quarterback. I think it was the Giants. Or maybe it was Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre. A quarterback gets intercepted, and as we know, when a quarterback is intercepted, he's fair game. Completely
Brett
fair
Favre.
Game.
It was Brett Favre in the NFC title game against the Saints, I believe.
Was it who? Against who?
I think it was Favre in the NFC title game against the Saints.
Against the Saints. Oh, that was the headhunter game. That was the bounty game. Where he got leveled, and it was I believe it was Anthony Hargrove. But anyway, the fact is a quarterback is fair game. Whenever there's an interception, he's just fair game. And you could block a quarterback. You can hit a quarterback as long as you are hitting him square and in the front and not behind the back, not an illegal hit. But how many times is a quarterback actually involved in the play after an interception? Not many. Not unless your name is Russell Wilson. Yeah, rarely. But Favre was leveled. I mean, like Scott Stevens to Paul Kariya, leveled. Or Scott Stevens to Eric Lindros, leveled. And the point is, those are all legal hits. But obviously, he was gunning for Favre, or he was gunning for the quarterback, and I saw the hit, but I didn't see the play. I actually went past the play and had to rewind it. I haven't seen the whole play yet. I wonder, was Burfict even in the play?
Yes. He was yeah.
Okay.
He was chasing after the wideout.
And he had a shot at
Le'Veon Bell. He was in
and
the ball.
He had a shot at him?
I wouldn't say he was a yard or two away. It wasn't.
Okay.
It was to me within the legal circle. For lack of a better
okay.
term.
Okay. But anyway, Brown and Bell totally takes us to the playoffs. And next week, my friend, we play a team that has no running backs. Well, they had to play an injured running back this week in Chris Thompson. And their tight end, Rob Gronkowski, is unfortunately suspended for next week. So we make out.
Not that unfortunate.
No, it's unfortunate for him, not unfortunate for us. But we completely make out. So our apologies to Paul Miyake, who we bounced out last night. But too bad, so sad. We'll see you next week, next year. And we'll be
it's
happy
funny,
to make your money.
But on the ESPN, it's funny because on the ESPN app, it shows we have a preview again playing Miyake. Are you sure? And then here it says, we're playing Miyake.
No.
Which is a much worse matchup.
We're not playing Miyake. Miyake didn't make
Good.
It. Hold on a second. Hold on. Look for schedule playoff bracket. Playoff bracket. Week one, we play Miyake.
Ooh.
Oh, how do we play Miyake again? That's not good for us at all.
No, that's a much tougher matchup.
Yeah, I thought we were playing how did that happen? I thought we were playing another team.
I think they didn't update it.
They might not have updated it. Because Miyake is 6-7 in the standings. Hold on. Miyake is 6-7. Big Dogs are they're both 6-7. Big Dogs have 1,908 points. Miyake has 2,000 points. Miyake makes it in. We needed the Big Dogs to win, and they lost. Oh, boy. We play Miyake again. I don't know how that happens.
because our division stunk.
Oh, well. No, that too.
How'd the rest of your fantasy teams do?
I won. I'm undefeated. Still undefeated. And Seth, thank you very much for the email to Paul saying we're not pleased because we're not. Well done. One I did go undefeated, and the other one I did not make the playoffs again. And I'm not happy about it, except for the fact that we do have a rule in that league. We have a keeper rule. And if you pick up somebody in free agency the year before, that pick is now in the 16th round. Well, a couple of weeks back, I was scanning the waiver wire, knowing that I was not going to make the playoffs. And lo and behold, I found Dalvin Cook and David Johnson, both on the waiver wire. So now I have a nice selection of either Dalvin Cook or David Johnson as my keeper next year in the 16th round. That's not a bad consolation prize.
No, it is not. I'm laughing. So in my other two leagues, I'm the number one seed in one, and I have a bye. In my big league, which I won last year, I've never seen this before. There's a three-way tie for first place at 8-5. There's a six-way tie for fourth place at 6-7. And one guy's five and eight.
So where are you? You're 6-7?
I am 6-7. I have the second most points in the league, so I have the five seed. The team with the most points in the league is the four seed. So I play them in the first round.
So that's well done, but let me ask you this. I'm in a league where, like I said, I ran the table. I'm 13-0. A 12-team league. 8 teams make the playoffs, which is ridiculous in its own right. I don't get a bye.
Not with 8 teams, you don't. Should be 6.
I go 13-0, and I don't make a and I don't have a damn bye. And I can get run out in the first round, which is likely because, hell, I've outscored everybody by 400 points this year. I have, of the 13 weeks, I have the high score 9 of the 13 weeks. Like, this is a monster lineup. Seth, I know you have to go. I appreciate you taking the time. Why don't we cut this off here? And we'll pick it up again next week, and we'll talk Aaron Boone, because I really think that we need to discuss the new wave of the manager and get your take on the Yankees. How does that sound to you?
Sounds good. Should we mention LeAngelo Ball as well, or not really? Or not even bother?
We'll talk about that next week. That's not going to change, so we'll talk about that next week as well. Okay? So
okay.
For Seth Kamen, this is Sean Palmer. Tune in tonight, ESPN, to watch me tootin' my horn. And we'll catch you next week on the rebound. Have a good day, everybody.
Have a good one.